You feel like you've been doing this thing over and over and over again, and you'd like to figure out how to make a change, right? Or you're at a place where something's ending. It can be a job, it can be a relationship, and you want to evaluate, you know, like, okay, who am I now? That's an ideal candidate for coaching.
You are listening to You Are a Lawyer. I'm Kyla Denayo, and let's get right into today's episode. So, Samantha, welcome to the You Are a Lawyer podcast. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Would you tell the audience a little bit about you and what you do?
Yes, absolutely. So let's see. I'm Samantha Devanjala, and I am an in-house lawyer. My journey to law has had a few detours. This is my third career. I started out wanting to be a doctor. Then I went into banking, and then I went into law. In law, I started out as a public servant. I started as a public health attorney, and then have done, you know, regulatory work with big law, and then going into in-house. So that's been the journey so far. Now, the fun thing I do on the side is I'm a life coach, and I work with people more on the transformational side of life coaching with a company called Radical Bench. And that's me. That's the journey.
Such a nice, neat package, but I want way more detail.
Actually, so my first job was I was a WIC attorney, so Women, Infant, and Children. The program, it's really just a wonderful program for people who maybe a little, you know, like a little, but maybe a little, I guess, poverty line, but they're women and infants and children that we serve. And so that was my first job. I was a WIC attorney. And in that role, I did a little bit of everything, administrative litigation to like grants to contracts. And that was really where I got my footing and could experience everything and decide what kind of lawyer I really wanted to be. So that's where I started. And then in a couple of years, I was doing just epidemiology, so more public health side of things, right? Like, so Zika, you know, I was at the time when Zika was a big thing, I was a public health attorney. And yeah, and that's what I did for a while before I transitioned onto the more regulatory side.
Yeah. I never imagined that WIC had attorneys. So yeah. Like, what did you do?
Well, I think most of what I did was really defending the program more for the participants, really. You know, so for example, a WIC, like stores that would participate in a WIC program agree to have at least what a person would need, one person would need for a month supply. So, you know they're wearing lobsters. It's like, you know, you're thinking about bread. Maybe you're, you know, like if it's a baby, you're thinking of your formula, like really not high level things, but the necessities, right? And so the store would have to have enough for the whole check. Back then it was like a check that the people would use. Now they're cards and everything. But there was a check that people would use. And so if a mom came into the store and she had this check that she was, you know, with all of these material, it would be like, this is for bread, this is for milk, this is for whatever the things where the kids need. But she couldn't, when she handed that check to the cashier, she couldn't get it back if there was an ingredient missing. So the store was responsible for making sure it had stocked up all of what that person would need on their monthly check. One person only. But you'd have stores like in big name stores who would not have enough supplies. And the parent would come in and have to give up some of the supplies because they had to hand the check over. And they wouldn't have the needs for their child or themselves over the course of the rest of the month, right? So I would then be the one on the government side who, if we had to say to a store, you didn't have this and now you're going to have to go on a little break, right? Go on a little probation for a few months till you can stock up properly and provide for these individuals. I would have to defend that because you can imagine a big name store and the revenue that they would be getting, not wanting that to walk away. So I would go into court and I would say, well, you know, our investigators came out, this is what they found. And, or you would have some stores that would be offering things that were not, you know, the health level of WIC to the participants while trading things, and then they would get in trouble. And so, yeah, so it was more against the stores and trying to make sure they had what the members or the participants really needed and that they were providing that without other things that they shouldn't have been providing.
I love that. So it was compliance, basically. You're making sure the store was compliant with what the federal government had. Yeah. And I love that that gave me a light bulb, because there's so many things that lawyers can do. I've always been a reader. I've always been like, give me the rules. It's easy to follow rules. If you tell me what to do, that's easy.
Yeah.
And so I hadn't thought about compliance until really late into my career. And I'm like, man, Kylie, you should have went into compliance. You would have loved it. But I really enjoy hearing about all these different nuances to compliance, right? Because I never would have imagined that this even existed.
Yeah, it definitely was a piece of it. And it was a fun program because, like I said, that was just one aspect. There were, you know, grantees, the people who would be handing the checkout and issues that may be there, you know, and there were some participant issues, but the bulk of it was, you know, wasn't participant specific. So, yeah.
Yeah, very cool. Okay. So then you went on to work in public health and the Zika virus. And then now you are running a coaching program. What's the name of your company?
Radical Bench. Radical Bench. Yes.
Radical Bench. And do you only coach lawyers or former lawyers, or tell us a little bit about that?
So Radical Bench, we're really kind of focused on empowering doers. And there are three categories of people that we serve. One would be lawyers, right? One would be the other one would be managers, and then nonprofit leaders. And that kind of comes from, you know, generally to be a coach, you don't need to have experience in the area, right? You're there to ask the right questions and get people to reflect and think and make their decisions as they need to. But, you know, I felt like I wanted to be able to provide coaching in industries that I was familiar with. So when, you know, now as a lawyer, I'm familiar with that world. I was a banker before and I managed, I was familiar with that world. And I used to have a nonprofit that I ran and I'm familiar with that world. So I felt like I could best serve those individuals in those particular industries because I had an understanding of what their day-to-day may look like and how I can ask the right questions to help them think through things. So, yeah.
And so where did the name come from? Radical Bench? Like what, it makes sense with the lawyers, even with the executives, how does that fit in with the nonprofit founders and leaders?
Right. So when I looked at it, I thought about it from a standpoint of when I was a kid and I grew up in Liberia, West Africa, and I would always sit with my grandmothers and the place that we'd sit, whether it was on a bench or on the stair, wherever we were, usually bench, was where I just felt accepted. It was a place you could just be. You could sit in silence and feel at ease. You could sit and like share whatever the burden was. And, you know, it was just a place where you could feel a resolution coming, but you could also feel an acceptance with that resolution. So the bench part of it was just kind of like an opportunity to sit together, sit somewhere where you were accepted, received, and were able to just be your fullest self without judgment. The radical piece of it is the level of work we're doing is really radical. Like I'm not, you know, my ideal client is someone who's about transforming him or herself, right? My ideal client is someone who's looking to not just like transition from one thing to another, but really transform the self, like reflect on who they are and figure out where they, you know, who they need to be for the next thing that they're trying to get to. So that whole radical transformation is where the radical piece comes in. I'm not looking for a small thing, but I'm looking for a big enough change that will not just impact, you know, my job from this job to the next, but all of me, my job, my family, my whatever else. And so that's where that comes in, a radical space that accepts you. We sit on this bench and we get to the resolution of what you need to get through.
Yeah, that is phenomenal. I read a book last year called Radical Confidence. And of course the cover jumped out at me. It's like hot pink font and I'm reading and I'm like, oh, it's so good. I've read it three times last year in 2023. It was so good. And so you should pick it up.
Radical I have to now that you're saying it.
Oh my God, it's so good. And so, okay. So I've worked with multiple coaches, but it took me years to understand and appreciate coaching. First, I did about 2.5 years of therapy, and I'm still in therapy. But then I was like, oh, therapy is not coaching. Coaching is not therapy. I could have both. How would you describe coaching? What I mean is if someone is listening and they're like, she sounds incredible. I would like to work with a coach. How would someone know that they would like to work with a coach or might need coaching?
That's a very good question. And I'm kudos to you for being in therapy. I'm a fan. I'm a strong believer in psychology and the healing that comes from therapy. So definitely advocate for that. Go and see a professional for certain things that that's what you need. Now, from a coaching perspective, I think who are people that could use coaching? I think anyone who is sort of like at a point where it can be a rock bottom, not in the sense of trauma or something like that per se, right? That would be where you'll go to the psychologist and get the help you need from that end. But in the sense of maybe you at a point where you're spinning in circles, you feel like you've been doing this thing over and over and over again, and you'd like to figure out how to make a change, right? Or you're at a place where something's ending. It can be a job, it can be a relationship, and you want to evaluate, you know, like, okay, who am I now? How does this take me from where I am to where I'm trying to go? And I think the best people for someone like me is you have some dream, you have something you want to do, and you're trying to figure out how to do it, but you need that level of empowerment to get from where you are now to where you want to be. That's an ideal candidate for coaching. And it doesn't have to be big thing, right? Like I have done therapy and I have a regular coach. So it's you know, there are things sometimes that you just, that will come up in a week and you'll be like, I want to think through this. I want to process this. Why am I having reservations about doing something that I know is good? Why am I holding myself back from getting to what I believe will be a good thing for me? And so a coach is helpful for getting you to sit with yourself and think. And we have so many distractions, so many things going on that very rarely do we sit with ourselves and think, right? Very rarely are we taking time to journal. Very rarely are we taking time to just kind of reflect even on what's going on in our life and how to make sense of the past with the present. And that's what coaching is for. It gives you an opportunity to sit with yourself while the coach can be there to ask you questions, to deepen your process, to deepen your reflection. But it's really just a moment with you, a moment to find, accept, and love on you and make yourself better for the next thing or for just the now, even if there's no next thing.
So Samantha, I'm nodding my head. And on a typical recording, you guys will hear me like, because first of all, for a lawyer to change, that in itself is radical. Okay. Lawyers are typically rule followers. We want to know what's happening. I want to know the step after that. I know if I take the LSAT, then I get into school. We know what's happening. We know if I follow this path, I could end up in these things. And so for myself as a lawyer, when I had to make a change and say, okay, Kyla, you have matched your salary in big law. Will you leave to be a podcaster? No, you can't. You can't. Who does that? Right? Who does that? I needed a coach to tell me, this is your nudge. You go do it. Right? So if you guys are listening and you're like, okay, but I just want to open my own firm and not work for anyone. That is radical. I don't care if you know 20 people who've done it. That's radical. Those are the kind of things you would reach out to Samantha for, to say, hey, can you help me? Can you walk me through this? Because if you've never owned a business before, you need to talk to someone who's running a business.
Right.
That is what coaching is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and it's you know, I think just generally the training we have as lawyers, to be very risk averse, right? We are trained to be like, okay, what's the problem that can arise? Let's avoid it. And, you know, I think sometimes we do a better job handling our clients' problems and their risk than we do our own. But, you know, I think that's a mistaken way of looking at it too as lawyers, right? Let's put it this way. One of the challenges I always have is, you know, every day you deal with problems you could not have envisioned. And every day you solve those problems for other people. So, you know, we just have to be understanding of that ability and confident in that ability to apply it to ourselves. Because every day, you know, and yes, you know, we have a lot of this, you know, what's the hypo going to be and what all of this. Yes. But you've been dealing with hypos for how long? Now you find all the possible things that could go wrong and you find all the ways that you can handle them when they go wrong proactively. And that'll give you some of the confidence you need to keep going forward. Also having that support, like I know having my coach to support me through different things that are happening really helps me to keep moving. Because if I had to just sit there in my rumination and my fears and my like, I don't want to take this risk, I wouldn't take a step forward. But having someone there to hold you accountable, to challenge you, to get you to really sit and think, what's the cost of not doing the thing you want to do? It's worth more than I can even state, you know, and you can see the growth in your life and you can see the progress you're making because of that.
Yeah, I love it. I love it because everybody needs coaching and everybody needs a guide, right? Someone who can take you from one point to another. And I remember I really thought I was going to come out of law school and just knew everything, right? In fact, when I was looking for a job and I was like, well, I think I want to do environmental law. No, I think I want to do criminal defense. No, I think big law. And I was like, first of all, I was mad that I didn't know. Mm-hmm. Didn't I just go to 3 years of school to know what I wanted to do? How did I follow all the steps? And now I still have to keep making decisions on my own. Yeah. I thought, you're out of law school and it's just done. And I was like, crap, nobody told me about this part.
Yeah,
I might be fulfilled by my career for 5 years and then it might change and whatever.
This is my third career. So I've changed a couple of times, obviously. But I feel like if I were to go back, recurring message I give that child is, you're not going to be one thing, right? You're not going to be one thing. Like this whole idea of, you know, we're going to be this one thing for the rest of our life, I think it puts so much pressure on people. And at the same time, it leads to like lack of fulfillment in people. And the worst part about it, it would be fine if you're someone where you got to that point because you started with you. But often it's like someone hands you a pair of jeans and you're just like, okay, this is, thank you so much, I'll wear it. You're not starting with, well, what's your waist size? What's the length of that jeans? Like, you're not starting with yourself. You're just like, I'm just so happy that, you know, I got a pair of jeans and I'm going to wear it. And I think for so much of a lot of our lives, I don't want to, maybe as minorities or maybe just in general, our families aren't studying us. You know, they're busy getting by with all the things they have to get by with. So it's not like anyone studied us to say, this is you. Now, when you're going out there, know this is you and use that as the building block for what pair of jeans you're going to wear. You know what I mean? What pair of jeans you're going to accept. I think we just kind of have, well, this is a brand and it's a fancy brand and let's go there. And it takes sometimes middle age or later in our lives where we finally are starting with ourselves as opposed to the externals, when we finally are like, okay, well, this is what I'm good at. This is my strength. This is how I'm going to use this, you know? And that's something we all struggle with. Like, I remember I used to say, I want to be a doctor. And my dad was like, why? Yeah, you know, because I would say, I want to be a doctor because I want to help people. He's like, but the janitor helps people, right? So why exactly do you want to do that? Like, you can do anything and help people. You can be a teacher. So why do you want to do that? But often nobody's asking why, because the things we're taking are so like esteemed that it's like, oh, go for it, right? Go for the esteem. Not start with you, not go for what's going to fulfill you, not know you well enough to pick. It's like, go for the esteemed. And I hope, especially I know you, your audience is like younger lawyers. You know, I hope that people realize at some point that it's so important to start with you. What are your strengths? What are the things that you enjoy doing? And my joke is always like, find where your passion and skill intersect. You know, wherever you are, where that passion and that skill intersect, you will find fulfillment there. But if you're going for, you know, to do something just because it's hard or to do something just because it's going to look good, very rarely do we find fulfillment in those things. But if we start with ourselves, what am I good at? You know, what am I passionate about? Then we have a chance of getting to that bullseye. And even that will change. Like the things I'm passionate about now, I wasn't passionate about 20 years ago. You know, and so, but just understanding, guess what? You're not going to be just one thing, number one. Number two, start with you. If you really want to get to that point of purpose, that point of fulfillment, start with you.
I absolutely love that. And I cannot wait to ask my daughter why. Why do you want to do that? Why do you want to do that? Why do you want to do that? Because, you know, I had a good childhood, but even having her, I grow up and I'm watching her every day and I'm trying to make sure she can do more than me. She can go further than me, right? I just read a book called 10 Times Greater, and it was talking about how you have to become a wanter. You're so used to only doing, I don't need that. What do you want? It's just, it's fascinating. Like, there's so much stuff that I'm learning, and I'm just like, I know I can't download it all into her. She's not a mini me. She is her own person. But I'm excited that she gets to grow up with this me who has accepted change.
Now, I was going to say, that is so great that you're saying that, because you know, years ago, I heard someone say this, and this changed my parenting altogether. They said, you teach what you know, and you reproduce who you are. And that was the biggest parenting challenge for me, because I was like, oh boy, I need to learn a lot because I need more to teach. You know, if they stop at me, I should be content, right? So it's kind of like that challenge to be like, okay, get it there, get it going. And I always think about that, you know, like you're raising a reader. Well, if that's who you are, you're going to reproduce a reader. You're going to reproduce a learner in you, right? And it's the challenge that as we're raising families, you know, if the best we're going to get is we're going to teach what we know, up that game, learn as much as you can. And if the best that you're going to get is yourself, you better invest in yourself and get yourself where you need to be. So we're not putting more pressures on these babies than they need to have on them, you know?
No, that's 100% true, because I only knew one lawyer before I went to law school. And I mean, I'd watch TV shows and movies about lawyers, but it wasn't until I got out of law school where I realized a lawyer in TV is not a lawyer in real life. They're not showing the 24 hours a week of deposition reviews that they're doing. They're not showing all of this terrible, boring stuff that you're doing. And so I wish I had reached out and learned a little bit more, but also, to your point, I told people I want to go to law school. And it was such an aspirational big goal. Go do it. Great. Nobody said why. Nobody said, Have you shadowed a lawyer? Nobody said, do you know what lawyers do all day? Nobody said, you know how much it costs to be in the bar every year. Nobody told me about all that stuff.
Yep. And that is so true. I came into law school thinking I was going to be a corporate lawyer. You know, I was a former banker. So I was like, this is what I'm going to do. And it was interesting because to my last semester of law school, I didn't have a job. I didn't get a job offer till like I was in the middle of prepping for the bar. And so I remember going and meeting about 60 lawyers. I met them in person. I met them by phone. I met as many lawyers that would meet with me when I was coming out of law school, that last semester of law school. And one of the things that was just really powerful to me was there were three categories of lawyers you met. Those who were in their jobs and really loved it. Like you could see that the job and their values were consistent, right? They were a rare group, very rare group. Then you had like people who were kind of like, you know, means to an end, whatever, whatever. And then you have people who were miserable, but they were there. And as they were talking to me about this great profession, you could just see, like, I remember one conversation, one of the persons that were like, I guess I could have done something else. Like, you could just like, you know, you could just see, yeah, it was bad. It was bad. I'm just like, when is she going to leave? And then other people who were like, would give examples of some of the sacrifices they'd made. And these were like trailblazers. And I remember thinking to myself, because I had our children when I was in law school. And I remember thinking to myself, yeah, I couldn't make that sacrifice. Like, I'm so proud of this person for making that sacrifice. But I just knew within me, I couldn't make that sacrifice. So it was almost like by meeting all these people, I was able to think to myself, okay, what kind of law career do you want? Because somebody someday is going to come in your office and you're going to talk to them and you're going to be one of these three people, like one of these three categories. So which category do you want to be in? And so I think I went into law in my career in law very intentional about avoiding certain paths, right? And I think that knowing that and starting with that level of clarity really has helped me to navigate my way through places and to move when it was time, even if it's hard, et cetera.
But, you know, listening to you, that makes a lot of sense that you put yourself in the seat of being like a mentee. Because now you're taking even all of that knowledge that you've learned. And now with coaching, I feel like coaching is kind of a mentee-mentor type relationship too. So it sounds like you've always been in this gather knowledge, share it with others type role. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think, it's funny. I got my coaching certification last year, but when I was getting it, I kind of kept thinking, I was in my 20s when I started managing people. And so much of what I did was coaching, you know, like I would develop, you know, associate development plans for them. Where do you want to go? Okay, let's get you exposed to this so you can get there. And so much of what I did as a manager and so much of what I loved about managing was coaching, right? And then I've had, you know, with my nonprofit that I ran, it was a lot of mentoring people and all of that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's always been who I've been. And in this moment though, I think I'm older and I have a little more experience now that I can share with people, not just about careers per se, but just about life in general and make sure that when they're determining their career, they're not leaving their life out of the equation, right?
Yes. Yes, that's so good. I'm thinking about my own life and then even where I am now, where, you know, people always say, or like if I go to like a networking event, someone says, hey, Kyla, so what do you do? And I'm saying, I'm a storyteller. And then that gets them to be like, what do you mean? And I'm like, well, from sitting where I am now, I'm like, well, I used to write stories when I was a kid. When I used to get in trouble, I would write my parents letters.
Me too. Oh, I did this, but this happened. Oh my gosh. I've and never I was like, did that. I did that too.
And I'm like, and so now I storytell with the podcast. I love to hear other people's stories. I was like, I've always been a storyteller, but like, I'm sure if I was in high school, college, you told me being a storyteller was a job, I probably wouldn't have believed it. And so I'm even grateful that like our kids can even see more things as they're growing up, that they can even see like that you could be whatever you want it to be, but also you have to tap into who you are. I love that you keep talking about you, like who are you? What do you want? What is the core of you and how does your career fit around that? Yes. Right? Because that's so anti to everything we've ever heard. And I think it's fascinating.
Yeah. Definitely. I think it's such a good thing, because it's like, unlike maybe we were groomed for certain things, right? So you have the writing ability, or, you know, whatever, like the advocacy with your siblings, like, you know, you had all of these other things that you had that would have made you a good lawyer. But step back, you know, the advocacy, the storytelling, the writing, well, all of that is something you use in year. So in raising our children now, I'm not raising any of them for one career per se, right? I'm raising them to have the love of learning, the analytical skills, you know what I mean? Like, and then guess what? You can take that love of learning. You can take that analytical skills. You can take that confidence knowing you've been learning all your life to do anything you choose to do when the season calls for a change. And so I think that's the cool liberation that we all have an opportunity to have at some point. Because when you start with yourself, and you're finding these options, even when they change, even when it's like, I'm leaving law to come into, you know, be a podcast host, you still are consistent with who you are, right? You still are consistent with who you are.
Yeah, absolutely. You just gotta be bold enough and take that risk. And I mean, law school has taught us how to mitigate risk. So if you take the jump, the radical jump, you'll be fine. You know how to handle when something bad goes on. You don't know how to just jump out and do what you actually want. So yes. Combine the two, work with Samantha, and you'll be golden.
you'll be golden. And you'll be so proud of yourself too, because I think, you know, we're so used to not, especially when we get into law, we're like, we're giving our recommendations and we walk away, right? Especially if you're on the firm side. You don't know how it all happens, how it doesn't happen in the, you know, on the other side once you give that advice. It's just gone in the wind and then till the next time. But I think when you have your own, when you have the courage to do what you want to do, whatever that is, and it doesn't have to be leaving law. It doesn't even have to be doing something. It can be even within law. How do you find fulfillment in a job that you like, but it's just not rising to the level of fulfillment that you hope it would have? You can look at that and create and design jobs sometimes where you could slay, you could do extremely well, but it takes paying attention to you and being willing and open to try something new. And every day you're willing and open to see people's issues, to solve people's issues, to resolve people. Yeah, I mean, every day you're willing and open to do this for other people. Okay, so just do it for you.
Absolutely. And so, Samantha, I typically ask every guest for a little bit of advice for young lawyers, 5 years practicing or less. I feel like you've been giving advice this whole time. But if you want to take one little nugget and just package it up, what advice would you have for young lawyers or law students about what they can do with their law degrees?
So I think, first of all, there's so many skills that your law degree equips you with, right? So I think as far as when we talk about passion and skill, your law career, your law journey has given you so many skills. You are now an analytical person, you're logical, you know how to analyze different things that are happening. There's so many skills. You can write, you can speak, you know, to some extent. You can do all of these things. So now take those skills, you know, and figure out where are you on this line, right? Because we all know, we know what we're greater at. Like if you were to say to me, are you a speaker or a writer? I'll be like, please give me a pen. I love talking to people like one-on-one, but I'm most comfortable with the pen, you know? And so what are you going to do based on the skill you have? Yeah, you may be a good speaker, but if you prefer writing, right? I couldn't be a litigator just by virtue of my liking the words more and not having the confrontation. I couldn't do that. So even within the law, if you're going to stay in law with your degree, find an area that makes sense for you. If you're someone who likes to fight, likes the confrontation, okay, litigation may be perfect, the competition, the whatever. Litigation may be perfect for you. If you're more along the lines of let's make a deal together, let's just, you know, all work together and get along, maybe transactional would be good for you. If you want to do more, what's the law? What's the regulatory side? That may be a fit for you, or compliance would be a fit for you. If you want to write, you can write. You can start a podcast where you're speaking. The options are just without limits, but go into your law career leaving room. Most people hate their first job they ever get. That's normal. Don't get there and think, oh my gosh, this was all not worth it. Give it a little bit of time, because sometimes you'll find maybe it was. Maybe it was just not a fit, you know, whatever you were doing. And working with the coach can help you navigate through that sometimes, because you need that objectivity. So you're not seeing all bad or all good or all whatever, right? You can see it with balanced perspective that you've been trained to see things with. The other piece I would say is whatever, ever, ever, ever you do, right? There's an Eckhart Tolle quote that talks about so many people spend their lives waiting, right? Instead of living their lives. They spend their lives waiting to live their lives. Don't spend your life waiting to live your life. If you get to a career in law and you find it's not a fulfilling space for you, it's not consistent with who you are, your values, or whatever, figure out something else. Use that law degree to do many other things or figure out what else you may want to do. And I love your podcast because there's so many options. You can go through all of these people that you've worked with and just determine all the options that exist for you. But don't stay there waiting to live your life, because to me, we all need to live intentionally and fully. I think we owe it to ourselves. So don't stand in the way of your fulfillment or your fullness or your intentionality because you're stuck somewhere and you feel like, I can't go back now. Yes, you can. I've done this 3 times. Like, you really can. You can change careers and you can find your fulfillment and you can move on. So please don't stay there if it's not working for you and it's not consistent with your values and who you are.
I love that. That might just be the title of this episode. Don't stay stuck.
Don't do it. Don't do it. And we all meet so many lawyers and we're like, if you really look at them, you know, you don't have to look far. You can see the resentment they have for the law. You can see what all is taken away from them, from family to marriages to themselves. And if you don't want to do that, you don't want to be that, then definitely don't stay stuck.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Samantha. This has been an absolute pleasure. Would you please share with the audience your website and the best way to contact you?
Yes, you can find me at radicalbench.com, LinkedIn also, and I have a little YouTube channel I just started, so you can find me there. There's some shorts of encouragement, and it's Samantha Divine Jala. And
we're all about it, y'all. Find us on YouTube, follow us on YouTube, okay? So, Samantha, thank you so much for sharing your time and your wisdom with us. I really appreciate it, and I will talk to you later.
And I am just happy to be here, Kyla. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to You Are a Lawyer. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend and leave a rating of this podcast. New episodes are released every week. So keep taking risks in your legal career, and I will talk to you on the next episode. Bye.